and welcome to the Yonkers Podcast, a weekly discussion on key trends in investment and economic policy from some of the world's leading commentators. In this week's episode, we talk about Japan after Abe. This is Adam Cotter from OnFIF Singapore, and today we have the pleasure to welcome Jun Saito, Senior Research Fellow at the Japan Center for Economic Research, and Kotaro Tamura, who's a joint professor at the Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy here in Singapore, and also former Senator and Parliamentary Secretary of the Cabinet Office in charge of economic and fiscal policy in Japan. Thank you both for joining us today. Now, as Japan's longest serving Prime Minister, Abe is of course leaving a legacy of quite aggressive economic reform, which we all came to call Abenomics, which has of course helped pull the country out of decades long deflationary slump. Was it a surprise to you both that he resigned?
So pity, yeah.
It was a surprise to me as well.
And Jun, what would Abe's departure mean for Japanese macro policy?
Well, I think it depends on the time frame. If you just think about the period where we are trying to find COVID-19, I think Abenomics, the set of policies suggested by Mr. Abe, is going to be has a very big meaning. So if anything, it should be strengthened. It requires to support the economy while we are fighting COVID-19. But once we are over COVID-19, once the vaccines and remedies are developed, I think Abenomics may need to be modified. I just mentioned three aspects. One is that I think we need to engage in fiscal consolidation because we have a big budget deficit and also a huge government debt. So I think we need to shift from fiscal policy to fiscal consolidation. Second, I think once we are out of deflation, and I think we will see reemergence of deflation because we have a big GDP gap. But once we are able to get out of the deflation, then we need to shift the monetary policy towards more normal monetary policy. So here there's a shift is needed from bold monetary policy to a more normal monetary policy. A third is a shift in the structural policies or growth agenda of the Abenomics. We need to improve or increase the potential growth rate. But for that, I think we need to promote more globalization and innovation. But if you come to think of that, they are the factors that would lead to a widening of inequality. So we need to address the inequality issue. So here we need a shift from growth strategy to inclusive growth strategy. That's my view.
Thank you, Jun. We'll certainly come back to the area of monetary policy measures later as well. But Kotaro, do you share that view? And perhaps you may also want to develop whether the future of Abenomics is now cast into doubt.
Suga-san is a founding member of the so-called Abenomics version one. I was kind of also the member of the founding member of the Abenomics version one. And the biggest striking difference between Suga-san and Abe-san is that, Abe-san has Abenomics nothing but the means to pursue his political goal. His political goal is a constitutional amendment. And he's a dynasty position. But Suga-san is, for the first time in recent Japanese LDP prime minister history, for the first time, he's from scratch. You know, he's a non-dynasty. He's a self-made position. He has not such a thing like a political agenda, like a constitutional reform. So for him, you know, economic policy is a goal, not a means. So Abe-san tried to get the more support from general public. He needs to raise the supplies, and he needs to make a better economy to convince general public to get a support for the constitutional amendment. Unfortunately, it didn't happen, and he couldn't make it. But Suga-san, yeah, he's from scratch. He's from a local economy, and the economy, and he knows the pain of the people in the middle of this pandemic, in the middle of the widening gap between rich and poor. And he's from the Akita. The Akita is the fastest shrinking and the fastest aging prefecture in whole Japan. And he is the oldest son of the agricultural farmer, but it's a very enterprising farmer. His father built up a brand of homegrown strawberry, and with the brand, he's selling with high price. So his agenda is, vitalizing the local economy and the economy of Japan. And he can control the bureaucracy. And because of his control of the bureaucracy, Prime Minister Abe has a very stable base, and he could survive more than 7 years. So he has no fear against the Ministry of Finance. Of course, we need a fiscal consultation, but he can do anything because he has no fear. So in order to revitalize the Japanese economy, I think, of course, Abenomics made up three arrows, fiscal stimulus and monetary easing and deregulation. So he will focus more on the deregulation. And partially thanks to the pandemic, so the gradual shift from Tokyo metropolitan area to rural area, the employees and the corporate headquarters is moving to countryside. And fiercely resisted reforms such as telemedicine, online education, are already happening in Japan because of the COVID. And his political enemy is Governor of Tokyo, Koike-san. So he's for the decentralization of the Tokyo. And our 40% of the population and 6% of the GDP is coming from Tokyo metropolitan area. That is quite unhealthy. And in order for the risk control, we know that we need to, how to say, diversify the economic centers. So Suga-san will do more for that. This pandemic can, in a sense, be a tailwind for Suga-san, who would like to revitalize local economy. So his agenda might be globalized, as Saito-san mentioned, globalized, especially Japanese SMEs. And the big companies are already globalized, and they are starting so-called DX, digitalizing their whole value chains. But SMEs consist of 80% of Japanese employment and 80% of the economy. So those sectors should be strengthened through reform. So Suga-san will do more through the deregulation. And Suga-san is for business, so he knows how serious the shrinking and aging population is, because he knows his hometown Akita really well. So he's pro-immigration. So now very difficult to take people from outside. But once we see the pandemic can be controlled, Suga-san will do more as a kind of pro-immigration policy and decentralization of Tokyo, try to revitalize the local economy through the deregulation and through more digitalization, and especially the digitalization in order to enhance the productivity of the SMEs. So yes, fiscal consultation is needed. We need to find out the exit for the monetary easing. But the third point, deregulation, Suga-san is focusing on that. I think, according to my analysis, Suga-san will do more for that. And the Suga-san, his political agenda is revitalizing Japanese economy and Suganomics itself, and among Suganomics, revitalizing local economy and globalizing the SMEs, and try to get the global demand into the Japanese local area. He tried to make it happen through the inbound tourism. Inbound tourism is almost dead right now. But once we find some solution, including vaccines, inbound tourism will be coming back. And, that can be a great addition for Suga-san's options to revitalize the local economy.
Well, there's certainly a lot of structural challenges ahead, and thank you for that very biographical account of Abe's agenda and his background as well. So just quickly on the politics, do you think it's a done deal that Suga-san will become Japan's next prime minister?
Life is almost over. Anything can happen in politics, but, theoretically speaking, life is almost over. Suga-san will be the next. But, you know, next year we'll be having the presidential election of the LDP again. So Suga-san doesn't want to have to try to stay in power, try to break the longest serving record of Abe-san. But, you know, he needs time to make his agenda happen. So, yes, within this year, he might call an election. Or if he is not calling election, he needs to make a short-term goal. He needs to produce, you know, convincing result to the general public. That this can be an election victory or the, some economic fruitful result. But he will definitely pretty sure to be the next prime minister.
And Jun, do you share a similar outlook on Suga-san and also on the likelihood of calling the next general election?
Yes, according to what I hear, I think the development seems to favor Mr. Suga, and I think there's high probability that he'll be the next prime minister. A surprise may come from the votings by the grassroots LDP party members in local districts. But even if that turns out to be very huge for Mr. Ishiba, for instance, I don't think it would change the majority of Mr. Suga becoming prime minister.
And back to the markets, what does that mean for local assets, but also the stock markets and, of course, the yen?
I think we have agreed that Mr. Suga is going to be the next prime minister, and probably he will stick to Abenomics, at least during the COVID-19. I think that would not upset the financial market so much in any way. But I think we need to be careful about the financial assets, because although I don't expect a big change in the developments. But if you think about monetary easing taking place while economic activity is staying very stagnant, maybe the recent surge in equity prices may not be able to be justified only by fundamentals. I think we need to be very careful about the possibility of a bubble emerging. And in this sense, I think we need to be careful, and we need a strengthening of macroprudence policy. Currently, the macroprudence policy is borne by Fiscal Financial Services Agency and Bank of Japan separately. And we don't have a kind of macroprudence policy consisting of all the members, like in the United States or in the United Kingdom. Maybe we need to think about something like that in order to address the bubble economy and this possibility of bubble economy surging. As for Japanese yen, I think, you know, there could be ups and downs, but anything that is foreseeable at the moment, I don't think it's not much of a concern, because it's very much limited compared to what we saw before Abenomics. If we recall, yen per dollar was strengthened above 80 yen, and it's much more limited. And if you think about inflation-adjusted terms, or in real exchange rate terms, the loss in competitiveness is very limited. And there are not many factors that will lead to appreciation of the yen in the future. For instance, interest rate differential is already low, and current account balance is declining. I don't think there's a large risk of downward pressure on the economy, and I don't see a need in that respect that the BOJ needs to do anything. But again, going back to what I said earlier, because we have to fight the COVID-19, and even after we overcome COVID-19, we have to fight deflation. There's much that monetary policy needs to do, and I think there will be occasions when they need to strengthen what they are doing now.
Of course, Governor Kuroda is still there, so do you foresee him pulling some monetary policy easing measures?
Yes, I think it's quite possible. But I think when he decides to do that, he needs to think about refining what he should be doing. Because I think we have seen a limit of injecting liquidity through commercial banks. And I think we need to think more about injecting liquidity directly to the market. So buying more equities, buying more commercial bonds, buying more J-Leads, I think they are the options.
Kotaro, going back to you, given Japan's high debt, do you think there will be a post-COVID push for more structural withdrawals of the stimulus that we've seen so far from Tokyo?
Before that, let me touch upon the local assets as well. So, yes, as Saito-san mentioned, we have a lot of money. This is pandemic, but not the financial crisis. So a lot of money in the world right now and looking for the place to sit. And, you know, Japanese market is one of that. So you got the recent news, Warren Buffett is investing billions into the Japanese stocks, including trading houses, because he knows the inflation is coming and the U.S. market is a bubble and the international stock can be interesting. So Japanese local asset is already considered very unique and small. You know, total capitalization variation of the Tokyo Stock Exchange, all companies, Section 1, Section 2, it's much smaller than five largest companies in the U.S., you know, Google, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Microsoft. So, yeah, Japanese market is that small, that unique. But we have so much money, so this is a source of the bubble. But at the same time, if we could mobilize such already printed a lot of money in a good way in order to improve the productivity of the Japanese, especially SMEs, also, of course, big companies as well, we can, to some extent, justify the share price of the local assets already highly valued. And for the fiscal stimulus, so, you know, politicians can do anything. And, of course, you know, fiscal consolidation is needed. We've been saying Wolf is coming, Wolf is coming for the last two decades, but, you know, Wolf is not coming at all. So, you know, the inflation is not happening and the financial crisis is not happening. Bankruptcy of the BOJ or Japanese, Japan as a country is not happening. So a politician might do another stimulus because, you know, they see no proof. They see no proof, you know, that the wolf is coming this time. This time it's different, but this time seems not different. So that's the mindset of the politician. So another fiscal stimulus might come. But, you know, as Saito-san has mentioned, you know, we need to think about the exit for printing money or yield curve control or digging, try to find out the possibility of the further digging of the negative interest. So this is coming to the limit and the BOJ has no more big options to do. Yen is now 105. At the peak of the Abenomics, the cheapest price was $125 to $1, so already 20% up against the U.S. dollar. So BOJ is not in the spotlight, and BOJ is actually doing little, but surprisingly, seems okay so far. But from now, you know, anything can happen among the pandemic. So if you know, something like stagflation kind of stuff happens, maybe BOJ or Japanese politics will try to do more. And such a hugely in debt country, inflation, of course, inflation and stagflation is a problem, but, you know, to some extent, inflation can be, in a sense, a cure for Japanese fiscal situation. So I agree with Saito-san, but, you know, politics is animal spirits game. So depend on the situation, anything can happen, and which might do anything.
It certainly can, and I'm sure the yield curve control debate will continue for some time, and there's certainly many potential issues at the Bank of Japan and other global major central banks will have to consider when they exit from these unconventional monetary policies that we're seeing around the world. You highlighted the importance of politics there. Maybe we can just come back to that quickly. This is a question for both of you, and perhaps, June, you'd like to answer first. But what would a potential change in the White House this year mean for the nature of the U.S.-Japan relationship?
But I think Japan-U.S. relationship is based on very solid grounds. so that changes in administration on both sides would not mean so much. I think, there's not going to be so much of a difference. Maybe the difference could be predictability of policies, and it may hopefully it would improve. But as I said, any change would not have a big influence on Japan-U.S. relationship because it's already based on very solid grounds.
And Kotaro, you obviously, you've highlighted that politics is very unpredictable. But would there be any great changes if there was a more predictable administration in the White House?
Japan needs to find out its own way to find balance. We are attacking the two titans, U.S. and China. Of course, security-wise, national security-wise, U.S. is the most important country. We are having the largest U.S. base in the world in our soil. But at the same time, China is the largest trade partner now to Japan, more than 20% of import-export, depending on China. And, for Suga-san, for inbound tourists, Chinese people are necessary. And Suga-san's biggest supporter is Nikai-san. Nikai-san is super pro-China. So Suga-san needs to find out a very good balance between U.S. and China. And if U.S. administration is changed to Democrats, and the basic policy for China is almost the same, but, the nuance and the attitude towards China will be different. At the same time, attitude toward us, Japan, will be also different. And you need to build up the relationship from the scratch. So, but Suga-san so far take control of almost all internal affairs as a shadow prime minister. That's why Prime Minister Abe could fly out to other countries so quite often. Diplomacy was 100% taken care of by Prime Minister Abe. Suga-san was an internal affair guy. But now he needs to take care of the diplomacy for the past time. So it's quite I'd say, even if, same administration and the same policy was captain the U.S., that's also a big challenge for Suga-san to build such a difficult to handle person, President Trump and his administration. So it's a big challenge, and that U.S.-China tension will be only increasing, I guess. And so if you are sitting in the Southeast Asia, Chinese influence is gaining steam. So Southeast Asia is a very important place. Japan needs to explore the opportunity in this place. India is a little bit different, but even in Australia, Chinese influence is just increasing. So, taking a good balance, try to find a way between two giants is quite tough for Suga-san to pursue.
Yes, well, I think this is a narrative that most countries are going to share going forward, and no country wants to have to make a decision between in either the US or China, so it will be a balancing act for the coming years. Now, thank you for joining us. It's been great to speak to you both about the work ahead for Abe's successor. To listen to more of these OnFIF podcasts, please do check us out on the OnFIF channel on both Spotify and iTunes. And if you enjoy listening, please subscribe to our channel as well. If you've appreciated the program, leave us a review. From me, Singapore, please, wherever you are, stay safe.